Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Think Orange podcast. My name's Dave, and as always, the host of the show, and I'm just sitting next to her, is Ashley. Hey, Ash,
hey, how you guys, doing? I'm good, thank you.
I think people are quickly learning that I am not the host of the show. You are, and I just sit beside you in the orange bunker.
I'm glad you're comfortable with that, Dave.
Thank you for getting rid of all the posters and all the tchotchkes from last week. And
what is a tchotchke? That's
a really good question, because all I know is that Joni loves tchotchke, but I have no idea what that even means. That's an old reference. You didn't even know what that is, dude.
You just aged yourself.
Our producer, Kevin, is smiling, and his assistant, Casey, is laughing. So she knows what I'm talking about because she's a Scott Baio fan. Am I right? Yeah, she's still laughing. She gets it.
Dave,
but you don't. This is why you're the host and I'm not. Hey, we want to welcome you all to episode 17 of the podcast. It's so great to be here with you. Today, we're going to be talking about something significant. I want to ask you straight off the bat. Ash, do you have any bad habits?
Oh, I don't know if I would consider them bad as much as just they're just the habits I have.
So should this be the introduction, or should we do a whole other podcast called Ashley's Bad Habits?
No, they're not all bad. But I love to bite my fingernails.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It just like I can't wait till they grow out so I can bite them again.
Really? Show me. Your fingernails don't look like you're biting them though.
I know. Right now.
So are you like, is it like stressing you out knowing that you've got fingernails and you can't bite them right now?
No. It's when I'm like feeling anxious or something that I have something to do.
Well, okay. Wow.
I also love to have bowls of cereal right before I go to sleep. Bad habit.
Well, is that a habit or is that just, you know, something that everybody does?
Do you do that?
No, I don't do it. I don't know. Maybe it's an American thing. I always see it on American sitcoms.
Cereal?
Yes.
Lucky Charms?
Cereal. Sounded like you're saying serious? Yes. Seriously, cereal. Well, today we are actually talking about habits and specifically spiritual habits and how we can influence spiritual habits in the lives of students, teenagers, and kids. Now, Ash, you know a lot more about this, I think, than I do, since you're the one with the habits. but you've also got all this ministry experience. So talk to me a little bit about these four spiritual habits.
Well, Dave, I think the better question is, how do we as ministry leaders focus on these four spiritual habits with the small amount of time we have with our students or kids? Because at best, we would say on average, we have about 40 hours a year with our students, considering holidays and vacations and sickness. So in those 40 hours, what are the things that we want kids to leave the four walls of our church? What skills do we want to instill in them so that they can have a relationship with God?
Yeah, that is a much better question. Thank you for correcting me.
You are very welcome.
So what are those skills? Like what specifically are you trying to pass on to them?
Well, Dave, I think I'm going to leave that question for our guest, Stuart Hall, who was interviewed by the one and only Brooklyn Lindsay. But what I can tell you, Dave, is how we implement those four faith skills, specifically within the weekly programs that we try to resource ministry leaders with. And everything we do when we're writing scripts or small groups or interactives, which are hands-on ways to make the message more concrete or experience pieces, we are considering these four faith skills in everything that we do because we know in the 40 hours we have students and kids with us, we want to demonstrate the four faith skills to them.
Yeah.
We want to tell them about how we implement it in our lives, and we want to give them a chance to experience it themselves.
I really like that because it's kind of like planting seeds, right? Mm-hmm. You're not dumping the whole seed bag on them.
Right.
You're planting seeds that ultimately will lead them to not stop believing once they leave the walls, right?
Right. And you know, time is an important thing here, right? Four spiritual habits will form over time.
Yeah.
And I think our role as ministry leaders is to help them figure out the skills they need in order to form those habits.
Yeah. And if you just basically just tell them that, they're going to forget about it later on. And who knows where they might end up. They might lose their faith, for example. But if you show it to them over a course of time through like some curriculum and stuff like that, you're going to ensure that once they leave you, they just don't stop believing, right?
Don't stop believing.
Which is a fantastic transition into the curriculum side of everything that Orange does. And in fact, Orange Curriculum is the sponsor of today's show.
Yeah, it is.
It sure is. The Orange Curriculum gives you everything you need to pull off your weekly program so that you can do only what you can do as a ministry leader, as a children's pastor. Do you know what that thing is that only they can do?
It is relationship.
That is right. So we like to do all the behind the scenes stuff that gives you more time to
have the conversations, yeah, do the training, follow up, yes, all those lovely things and that just take up so much time.
And just love the kids, mm-hmm, that you have been blessed with the opportunity to influence. So with Orange, you'll have a comprehensive strategy for all four phases of a child's life. There's a whole bunch of stuff there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there are some people listening who are going, I'd love to get involved with that, but I don't know if I want to really commit to that yet. Do you know what, mm-hmm, you know we can have them do? If that's you listening right now, what would you say to them?
Well, Dave, they can actually go to tryorangefree.com.
And what?
Tryorangefree.com.
And if I go there, what do I get to do?
You actually get a free month of curriculum and a free training video so you can kind of test the waters.
I don't know who brought that URL, but that is the best URL I've ever heard. Because if you go, I wonder what happens if I go to tryorange.com. Well, you get the try orange.
I just want you to know it's tryorangefree.com. Try
orange. If you go to tryorangefree.com, you get the try orange.
Free.
Free. It's all there in the title. The clue is in the URL. So if you're sitting here today listening to this podcast going, I love what I'm hearing. I've been listening to the previous 16 episodes and I want to try Orange, but I don't know if I want to commit. All you need to do is go to tryorangefree.com and you will be able to try Orange free. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. So today we are going to be listening to some great stuff coming to us from Adam Duckworth, first, mm-hmm, of all. He's an amazing guy. He's probably the best dressed pastor that I know. Would you agree?
He is well dressed. He looks like he walked out of a catalog.
He does. Mm-hmm. Like a J. Crew.
Wait, I just said a catalog. Does this even exist anymore?
Yeah, welcome to the 90s. Thank you for bringing that back. He does look like he walked out of a catalog, whatever that is. If you don't know what that is, please Google it. But he used to be a children's pastor, but now he is the lead communicator of Downtown Harbor Church in Florida. I had to read that properly because in my head it was Downton Harbor, which reminds me of
Downton Abbey.
Of course. So I had to read it properly. He is the lead communicator at Downtown Harbor in Florida. And we're also going to be hearing from Stuart Hall,
who is a student ministry legend.
Who was interviewed by another student ministry legend.
True, Brooklyn Lindsay.
Yes, while we were both gallivanting around the countryside. And around. Well, hey, you talked about catalogs, so you went back to 1990. I'm going back to 1890.
Yeah,
with gallivanting.
Running through the wheat fields.
Yes, well, we were gallivanting through the wheat fields in various parts of the world. Brooklyn stepped in, and she did an amazing job. And so you know what? I'm going to throw it over to Adam right now, and then we're going to hear from Brooklyn and Stuart a little bit after that. Here you go. Take it away, Adam.
So I just want to start out with a story a little bit just about how I got started in ministry, because it's a pretty unique story. And the story actually ties in to how we want to talk about these spiritual habits. Because when I started in ministry, I was sitting in church and I was just had turned 18 years old. I'd been in church all my life, but I had never really taken the leap. I had never really gotten plugged in. And maybe the way some of you got plugged in was the way that I got plugged in. And our senior pastor was kind of standing up on stage and he had a volunteer card, and it was like a volunteer Sunday. And maybe some of you have been there and you haven't been back, you haven't like gotten your life back since, and that would make us similar and those kind of things. So he was up there and we're like, we need people to volunteer in the lives of teenagers and those kind of things. And I said, okay, well, I think I can do that. So it turns out I checked the card and I got a call from like what would have been the office manager. And she said, could you come in and have an interview to volunteer, for this department? And here's one of the most interesting things about where I walked, because I walked into the wrong office. And I walked into the children's pastor's office, and I did not know that that encounter would change my life for the rest of my life, because she sat down with me and kind of gave me the spiel about what the position looked like and what we would be doing. And then she asked me a very crucial question, and she asked me, what age would you like to work with? I was 18 at the time. I said, I probably would like to like invest in the lives of like sixth or seventh graders. And she said, well, you are in the wrong office, because the youth pastor's office is down the hall. And I said, well, maybe I'm here for a reason, and so I signed up right then and there to be a small group leader for kindergarten and first grade boys. And my life has never been the same since that moment. So here I am. So I like to start out talking about relationships and talking about small group leading and talking about how we implement these four spiritual habits we're going to talk about by telling that story. Because really that story started my journey on the course of being a small group leader in the lives of kids. And it started in this context of relationships. Here's one thing I want you to know. If you're serious about giving kids a mobilized faith and you want to impact spiritual habits, you need to get serious about connecting kids to consistent leaders. If you want to take these four things that we're going to talk about today and you want to implement them and kind of help kids disciple and you want to help kids kind of get their faith right and start doing things that are going to influence their spiritual habits and their spiritual journeys, you have to get serious about connecting kids to consistent leaders. I start with the story of how I became a small group leader because it's so important, because these spiritual habits are just spiritual habits unless they have context for how to implement those spiritual habits that we're going to talk about. And what we believe here at Orange, and what we believe in the context of this leading small thing, is that that best happens through the context of relationship and through the context of a consistent leader, a consistent small group leader in the life of a kid every single week. Because here's the deal. Before we get into some of these things, I just want to talk to you about kids today. Because I don't know if you've been out there and you've been interacting with kids today or teenagers today, but I assume you have because you're here. And there's a lot of stuff that goes on in their lives today. If you've noticed and you've looked out there, have you looked at suicide rates? Have you looked at depression rates? Have you looked at things that have happened and are happening in the lives of kids that they face today? They need consistent leaders and consistent relationships in their lives so that they can begin to implement some of these spiritual habits. Because here's one thing that I know, and if you can go to the next slide, it's this, is that no kid should ever feel like they have to do life alone. And I know a lot of kids who feel like they have to do life alone. And I don't want them to have to do that anymore. So as we begin to take a look at how they can grow in their faith and grow in the context of their faith and grow in these like disciplines and these things that we want them to do, we also want to make sure that they're doing that within the boundaries of these relationships that can help guide them through this process. Because here's something else that I know. I know that God created us to need community. If you look throughout Scripture, God always created people within the context of community. When he created Adam, he knew that Adam needed someone else. See, God leverages community so that he can reveal himself to us. God leverages community so that he can reveal himself to us. Now, here's something that I think that is important. Is that when you talk about and you think about your faith, and as we talk about these relationships that we try to build, these consistent relationships with the lives of kids and or teenagers, if you think back to your own spiritual journey, there was someone in your life who came alongside you, who built a consistent relationship with you that helped you implement and influence your spiritual habits. And this is something I believe. There's something about the character of God that is revealed best when we show up for each other and simply enter into someone else's life. This is important. Don't miss this. There is something about the character of God that is revealed best when we show up for each other and simply enter into someone else's life. I love the session last night when they talked about what happens if there's an issue that comes up, and sometimes you just need to be there. Sometimes you just need to sit and listen, because so often, and I don't know when this happened or how this happened, but we as Christians kind of felt this need to be problem solvers for every situation. But what if this is true? What if there's something about the character of God that is best revealed when we just sit and listen and are there and we be there as a presence in the life of someone else? Take that a step further. What if there's something about the character of God that is revealed when we, as leaders of kids and as teenagers, just sit there and listen and are there when they need us to listen? Because if we build that bridge during these crucial moments, won't that then open the door for us to share with them when we need to teach them strongly about spiritual habits and what that looks like? What if, think about this principle, what if the best way for a kid or a teenager to know God is to know people who know God? Think about that. What if we flipped the switch on this and we said, what if the best way for kids or teenagers to know God is to know people who know God? I can tell you this, and this is my own personal spiritual journey that I'm opening up about. I'm telling you that I have learned more in my life from people who know God than anything else. This has been a consistent win in my spiritual journey. And I'm telling you, the kids and the teenagers that you lead are looking to you daily, weekly, monthly to implement some of these spiritual habits in their life. They're looking at you because you know God. And I really want you to think about this question because it's kind of revolutionary. What if the best way for kids or teenagers to know God is to know people who know God? Where will you lead them? What will you teach them? Think about the Israelites and Moses. Moses knew God, and the Israelites knew him. He communicated with them on behalf of God. He had that responsibility to communicate what God had told him to his people. We, in the same way, but yet a different way, carry the same responsibility through the context of relationship with the kids and the teenagers and the leaders and the people who are in our inner circle that we serve. Now, this is just a kind of a weird stat. How many people in the room are under the age of 35? Right. Oh, that's good. You guys are looking good, man. You're great, okay? So none of us were alive when Elvis was alive, right? Okay, I mean, we got any Elvis fans in the room? Oh, he's not real popular here, that's cool. I mean, I'm not a big Elvis fan either, but you know, we are in Georgia, but I didn't know if they're, okay, got it, not a problem. Do you know what the second most visited house in the U.S. is besides the White House? Check it out on the screen. It is Graceland. Did you know that? The second most visited house in the U.S. is Graceland. Now, here's another interesting stat about Graceland. Graceland is visited by 600,000 visitors per year. Half are under the age of 35. 600,000 visitors per year visit Graceland are under the age of 35. So, let me ask you a question. How do people who didn't live when Elvis lived know about Elvis? Here's the point. The best way for someone to know about Elvis today is to know the people who knew Elvis. There's a point. Because people who knew Elvis, maybe not in this room, but out there, loved Elvis, okay? Elvis ain't popular here. But there's a point there that we want to make, and we want to make clear, is that we have a responsibility for kids and teenagers who are dealing with these things, who are dealing with this idea that they're believing in a big, big God that they can't see, and their worlds are falling apart all around them. And you know what? We can't see him either, but we have had experiences and knowledge and interactions with relationships with people before us and current people in our lives that have helped us see God, and we want to be that for them. The best way for them to know God just might be to know people who know God. So let me ask this question. How can a kid know God if they can't see him? How can a kid know God if they can't see him? And you know what? This may seem like a jovial question to us because it's like, we can't see God. How do we know? But here's the deal. This is a very real question. And kids and teenagers today are growing up in a very real world where this is important, this is relevant to them, this is something they talk about and they deal with on a consistent basis. And here's just a couple of things that I want to say about it. They can see you. They can see you. And they can see the way that you love a child. They can see the way that you love a child, and they can see the way that you model acceptance, and they can see the way that you model grace, and they can see the way that you model forgiveness. And I'm telling you something right now, whether we want to assume this responsibility or we don't want to assume this responsibility, it is real. But when kids and teenagers are forming their faith and they're exploring what their faith is, they are looking at certain individuals to craft their faith and to see who God is and to see what he stands for and what he is. And those certain individuals they are looking at are us. So as we influence their spiritual habits, we want to make sure that we are accepting and graceful and forgiveful, I don't know if that was the right word or not, of what they're going through. And that's how a kid will know God. And here's something else. This is a concept that we've kind of come up with. If you want to help a kid know God better, get to know the kid better. If you want to help a kid know God better, get to know them better. Because as you kind of peel away the layers of relationships with kids, and as they kind of peel away the relationships with you, they get to see more of who God is and what God has done in your life. So if you want to help a kid know God more, get to know them better. Because I'm going to tell you something, if you really reflect on this, and I know we're tossing a lot of information at you real quick, but as you really reflect on this in your own personal spiritual life, and you look at how you have like come to faith and what your journey has been like, if you look back at the people in your life who have first known God and have passed that along to you, I guarantee you your heart starts to stir, your mind starts to stir, sometimes your eyes even start to water because of what they have done for you in your life.
Hello and welcome to the Think Orange podcast. My name is Brooklyn and I get to be with the one and only Stuart Hall today. Now, I have had the privilege of hanging out with Stuart a couple times, different stages, communicating things here and there.
States.
But you live in Atlanta.
I do. Just north of Atlanta.
Yes.
No one actually lives in Atlanta.
That's true.
Everybody says, I live in Atlanta. Where? 50 miles away.
Yes. Actually, there's nothing further from the truth. That's so good.
Last time we were together, we had fun playing with a little baby. Do you remember that?
We played at a baby. Was that in Mississippi?
I don't remember, but...
I think it was Hattiesburg.
This baby was enamored with a water, like a empty Aquafina water bottle.
And we were all about it.
Yes. Well, I don't think we heard anything anybody else said because we were playing with that child.
Somebody was on stage talking about something good and we were just playing with a baby.
It was borderline taken because we don't know where their parents were. Yeah, the baby's parents.
We were just holding a baby. It was so fun. Well, it's good to sit with you and talk to you and learn more about you. Want to just tell us real quick what you've been up to lately before we get started? We're going to talk about spiritual habits today.
Sure. I mean, I spend most of my time on the road as a representative for Orange, mainly speaking to teenagers, but also spending a ton of time investing in youth pastors, adult volunteers. As the Phase Project came out, I've been doing a ton of stuff helping churches discover how to implement Phase strategically within the context of their specific ministry. My favorite thing is to be husband to Kelly and dad to Grant, Chandler, and Cameron.
I hear so you have a very athletic family.
I'm married way over my head. Actually, my wife was a cheerleader and her parents owned skating rinks.
Yes. So, do you go?
No, I never went. My parents wouldn't let me go.
That's a sad thing.
But my wife's maiden name is also Rambo, so I'm really scared of her.
You should have taken her name.
I know, that would have been incredible.
Stuart
I want
Rambo.
A name like a
can
dog
you guys,
Rambo.
Can you guys, let's just vote. If you can tweet right now, just tweet, Stuart Hall should be Stuart Rambo. And just cast your vote right now.
And I'm always afraid my wife's going to jump out of a tree and cut my throat.
Oh, no. That's really, I'm sure she's very, very kind and nice.
She is. She's very beautiful, very kind.
Well, speaking of kind and nice things, murder isn't in spiritual habits, I don't think.
No, it's not. So. Yeah, it's further, nothing could be further from the truth. And that was by far the worst transition ever.
Okay, can we rewind that or maybe you'll keep it? I don't know.
No, keep it. I like it. I mean, we're talking about teenagers and habits.
That's true. We generally don't believe in murder. So
yes, generally speaking.
All right. Well, we have been...
This has gone off the rails quickly.
Well, hey, this is what happens when you get two youth ministers in a room.
That's very true.
Full of conference attendees and peppermint patties.
And it's the end of conference, so.
Yes. Well, spiritual habits, that's a super exciting phrase. I mean, let's talk about Lectio Divina.
Or also known as...
No, I'm just saying, spiritual habits excites people just as much as the phrase kale fruit smoothie, pretty
yes,
much,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
So, yeah. Yes. So even though it's kind of lackluster and it's not the thing that everybody loves to talk about, we all know it's really important to develop spiritual habits in students. Sure. So the last thing we want to do is for them to leave our ministries and for them to not know how to hear from God or to be able to pray or communicate with God. Or to even articulate their faith, mm-hmm. or say, this is what I believe and what I think is true and how this truth affects me. Mm-hmm. And then really how to live like right. with God.
Right.
So we want to talk about like how we prepare them for their adult life. And I just want to ask you, how do you define a spiritual habit? And like, what does that mean? I think it's important for ministers to know, okay, what is that? And is that a phrase we should even use?
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's a great question. I would actually advocate taking a couple steps back from how we kind of frame spiritual habits and ask ourselves what real faith is. Because until you define or have an idea of what authentic faith is, if you're not careful, you could misdefine what faith is and consequently, you're going to always gravitate toward what you're focused on. So if you misdefine what faith is, then the habits that you develop or you advocate to develop authentic faith could be really skewed.
That first step then would be to define faith. And like, yeah. what would and you recommend
the way,
leaders do to
the
do
way
that?
We've kind of framed authentic faith is trusting Jesus in a way that transforms how you love God, how you love yourself, and how you see and love the world.
I'm so glad that you included how you love yourself,
yeah.
you know, because it's kind of hard to love others and care about others when it's hard for you to care about yourself
sure.
or to believe that you are worth caring about. That's
no
really good.
Right.
I don't think that has much to do. Maybe it does have everything to do with spiritual habits because knowing that comes from these habits that you develop.
No question.
Right?
Until I can see as God sees, I'm going to be much less apt to do what God says.
Wow.
And when I start recognizing that God sees me, I've been created in His image. The thing that, you know, we tell our daughters all the time, you are the apple of your heavenly Father and your earthly Father's eye. You have been fearfully and wonderfully made. You are loved so much that He sent His Son to stand in your place.
Yeah.
Then that begins to build something in the heart and the life of a kid that changes them forever. And I think a lot of that does is it builds some confidence in them having, you know, discipline and as far as it relates to their building their spiritual life and their faith.
Yeah, and why would you share something with someone if you don't see any value in it for yourself?
That's good.
You know, because I'm thinking about a teenager. They got a pack of gum, you know, and you know if they pull it out, it's gone, right?
Right.
But they protect it and they kind of keep it to themselves.
Right.
But when it's something new, I'm thinking their social media. They're on something new, a new game. They're just talking about it. Like this is so much fun. This
right.
is what I love. This like and I think when it comes to our faith. That's what teenagers tend to do when they start to feel the value of their faith and how it transforms who they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's not so much something they want to hide.
Yeah,
it's something
good.
They want to share. I love telling my kids, you are worth Jesus to God.
Oof.
Like you're worth Jesus to God. And
oof.
And they don't really understand it all the time, but mm-hmm. just remember, like when you feel this way, this is your worth.
Mm-hmm.
So saying it's one thing, but believing it
sure.
can be difficult.
And I would take that to another level. You know, we still have one teenage daughter at home. She's a sophomore in high school. And if you were to walk into her bedroom and bathroom right now, her bedroom mirror and her bathroom mirror have dry eraser marker all over them. And what she's done is she has reminded herself of how she's seen by God.
Wow.
So that she can see herself correctly. It gives value to her wanting to spend time with her creator and to see herself that way changes the way she walks onto a school campus and
yeah.
has confidence when everything about her culture seems to want to beat her down.
Yeah. She's doing a visual replacement. Like, mm-hmm. okay, the world says this about me, but this is what I know is true.
Right.
So what a cool, like and creative way. I wonder how a teenage guy would do that. Like, have you ever heard of a guy like kind of reminding themselves of that kind of truth?
Well,
I asked because I'm like, I want to do that right now. But then I'm thinking, could I encourage a junior high guy to do that?
Right.
Or like, what kind of way would I like shift him toward? Or maybe let me just back up.
Yeah. I think one of the differences about guys and girls that I found is that girls have to feel good about themselves to actually like their life to transform. Once they feel good about themselves, then their life starts changing. Guys are different in that they got to make sure they're good at life to feel good about themselves.
Wow. Yeah.
And so there's a whole lot of performance stuff in guys that girls don't feel because they want, you know, it's not an insecurity. Right. But what I do know as a husband is the most important thing I can do for Kelly is to make her feel secure. If she feels unbelievably loved, then how she acts and behaves is a completely different thing to when she feels belittled or of zero value. On the other hand, if I've had a good day doing what I do, I come home feeling good about myself.
Yeah. It's like when you give a kid an opportunity to serve, sometimes when they serve, they are able to, like, a guy might be able to understand, okay, now my faith makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I think guys and girls can switch roles depending on how they're wired.
No question.
But definitely there's this movement from, like, doing something tangible to understand, okay, I feel like I can do this, which means, like, I've been able to do it because of this.
Right.
And then knowing this enables me to do that.
That's good.
So it's really good. But a lot of this is really developed in spiritual habits.
No
so
question.
I want to swing back to that and just ask you, like,
that's important.
Let's swing back. And I think we're talking about the same thing here.
We are, exactly.
But what four spiritual habits would you say youth leaders and churches should be developing in their youth?
To generalize them, you nailed it. Spiritual disciplines is not the hot topic and it's not the felt need.
Mm.
And there's several reasons why. One, I think, is the way we presented it to teenagers. But the other thing that I think we need to keep in mind, if we define faith as trusting Jesus in such a way that it transforms how you love God, yourself, and the world, then the key is trusting Jesus. And trust is built on, the currency of relationship is trust.
Yeah.
So consequently, if we can begin to frame the idea of healthy spiritual habits within the context of start it with trusting Jesus. And that's important, in my opinion, and it's, you know, what we've talked about when we talk about four spiritual habits. That's important because we are living in a post-Christian culture.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I had a youth leader yesterday walk up to me from Connecticut, emotional. She was weeping openly. And she was so grateful that I talked about the idea of post-Christian culture as it relates to teenagers, because post-Christian culture means that we're living at a time where the claims, the defense of Christianity is known, but it's either been rejected or forgotten. And consequently, if we're not careful, we can keep sliding scripture across the table to students and children, mm-hmm. and we're operating from an assumed position of authority. We act as if we assume that students think that the Bible is, you know, God's word and has ultimate authority in their life.
Right.
And nothing could be further from the truth.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, we have to start beginning at Jesus.
Yeah.
Let's get the Jesus part figured out.
Well, Jesus breaks this cycle. You talk about the word trust, and that implies that there's something else at work.
Right. It's relationship.
Well, it's brokenness too.
Yes.
There's a pain cycle. Like, if you're comparing, there's a pain cycle, there's a sin cycle, and the interruption that happens is this truth, this trust. And if you operate in that trust cycle, it changes how you respond to the world and yourself, right?
Right.
So if there's these two things at work and you're saying, you know, we're passing this scripture across, they're pain cycles at work,
yes.
not the trust cycle, because they haven't had an opportunity yet to trust in the truth or to even know what it is or what it looks like yet.
So when we're talking about these four spiritual habits, the first one is the way that we've reduced these things is hear from God. And obviously within most church contexts, we think the best way to do that is through the scriptures.
Or through preaching.
But the problem with that is that if people are very resistant to it, then we've got an issue, because we have to measure spiritual growth relationally, mm-hmm. because it's a relationship, and they have to trust in this person, Jesus, for anything else to make sense. The problem is we've come at it, in my opinion, Jesus is in the middle, the Old Testament and New Testament on either side, and most places have started on the outside of the Bible and tried to work into Jesus, when in reality, I think we have to start with Jesus and work our way out.
Yeah,
so that they can begin. I want to start with your relationship with Jesus. It's so incredibly important. And I know that not as a communicator, not as someone who's, you know, 20-something years of working with teenagers, but as a dad. I have. Right. We've sent two children off to college and one still in high school. And our two that are in college, the anchor that holds them true is Jesus. Because especially our son, who's at a very liberal university, everything about his faith has been tested and questioned.
Yeah.
The anchor that holds him true is Jesus. And that's why spiritual habits are important to him. So,
well, and I want to kind of just go back to what you said, because you said it all comes down to this relationship with Jesus. But if we think about Jesus and his relationships that he modeled to us, he didn't introduce himself and then leave. He introduced himself and gave us himself through the Holy Spirit. And so I wonder if, because what you're saying is relationships are the focal point of this here. I wonder if it's not instead of like giving them a habit to develop, but sitting with them as they develop it. Because God is with us and helps us and doesn't leave us. And we're really the only tangible example of Jesus until they know him.
Right.
So if we're kind of that person, then what do we do to offer them the habit? Like, what's our role in like facilitating that, the growth of the habit?
Yes, that's good. Well, one thing I think we have to do as adults is that our trust has to be evident.
Oh, yeah.
And part of Here's what I know about you and I as friends. If you don't ever hear me talking about Kelly, you would begin to wonder, do I have a relationship? I mean, is he married? But people that know me best know all I do is talk about her. Uh-huh. So you don't have to wonder. And the more that I talk about her, you find out more about her because of me.
Absolutely.
So that is something that is so easy that every leader can do, is just simply regurgitate what you're learning and who he is to you and how your faith is growing, because it's much more caught than it is taught.
Wow,
that's part of the problem, is that we've tried to teach kids how to have habits, when in reality we have to show kids how to be habitual in their spiritual growth. That's my take.
Well, yeah, you're saying like basically be vulnerable with the faith that's growing in you.
Yes.
Like let that be seen.
And also consider that most teenagers are growing up in homes where mom or dad don't talk about faith issues out loud.
Wow.
And it's because they grew up in a time where you didn't do it.
Yeah. It was more an internal.
It was so much more of an internal thing. And then we wonder why students struggle. Well, part of the reason why is we're not out there with with our faith.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the smallest mention of, and they all kind of flow together, because the four are to hear from God, to pray to God, to talk about God, and to live for God. Well, the second, pray to God, is just like the first. I think students need to hear us ask them, how can I pray for you?
Mm-hmm.
We expect kids to have this ability to talk to someone that they can't see and they're not sure exists, and be able to do it in this unbelievably elite way, using all of these spiritual words.
Yeah.
Oh, when maybe the best thing I can do is go, hey, and Ryan Leak nailed it about this, how can I pray for you? And begin to actually pray for them.
Yeah, like that's the craziest thing. I have a friend that literally, all, you know how you just naturally in a relationship talk about what's going on in your life. And she'll just, right in the middle of our conversation, open eyes, looking at each other, say, well, let's pray. And, you know, I reach out my hands, I prepare to close my eyes, and she just looks and she says, God. And she just starts talking to God, looking right at me, talking to God, talking to me. And it really frees me to think, okay, wait, prayer isn't necessarily this thing that we confine to a quiet moment. It's a conversation that we have continuously. I know you have a checklist for your kids. How many times did you pray today, right? No, I'm just kidding. I
actually had a conversation with my pastor about this a couple of weeks ago, because we were laughing how, and I'm very fortunate, I didn't start following Jesus till I was in college, but he grew up very, very religious. He was like a Shiite Christian, and everything was so legalistic.
I was waiting for the word Shiite to come out in this podcast.
But in another way.
Stop.
But we were reveling and talking about how awesome it is that we're raising children in a home that's not legalistic.
That's good.
Because our kids are never going to have that hanging over their heads.
Mm-hmm.
And they can just be free to love their creator and to build that relationship with Jesus. And we have the freedom to be riding down the road and just start talking to Jesus on their behalf while we're driving, because you don't want to close your eyes while you're driving and talk to God. And those are the things that make it relational.
Yeah.
But when you do that enough, you're creating that capacity to, you know, you were messing with me about our kids, but part of the reason why our children do what they do is my wife is so much of a disciplined fiend physically. She is, I mean, she works out and runs every day. Mm-hmm. I was a college athlete 50 pounds ago. She constantly works out. Uh-huh. Well, they've seen her do that. So there's something in it. It's like you running with your daughter. You learn, you catch habits.
Right.
You don't teach habits.
Yeah, culture is learned. It's learned.
So if I can say, hey, how can I pray for you? Not only do I want to pray for you, but now I want to pray with you. Mm-hmm. And once you start getting okay with it, then I want to let you pray, and I'm just going to agree with you.
Wow, that's good.
So like, we're at a point now where we get in a car to go on vacation, and I'll say, Cameron, pray for us before we go. And she'll just start praying, and we'll agree with her. And then what happens is they begin to see their friends and everybody that way. How can I pray for you? Let me pray with you.
So we're talking about developing a culture, not necessarily a list of things you have to do to grow in your faith.
No.
But we're talking about a culture where you can hear from God.
Yes.
And growing that culture sounds so much more exciting than developing a rule or, you know, a system or a checklist. So I think just hearing from you, hearing you talk about your family, me thinking back, you know, just trying to teach prayer to a sixth grader.
Yeah.
I mean, we used to do things called prayer spaces, where we would literally just open up a giant room, and I would put like a window and some dry erase markers over here and some art over here and fold some paper over there, and literally just trying to help them understand that you can begin to think about God.
Right.
And maybe talk to God or express yourself in some way. We might have some music. We might have some other things. And it became really one of those powerful things every month that we did. I never could really measure it.
Sure.
But it's developing a culture.
Well, and the reason why you can't measure spiritual growth well is because it's spiritual.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah.
It's spiritual. Yeah, that's a very difficult.
So good.
It's like trying to hug fog. Mm. How do you hug fog? You can't.
No.
It's spiritual.
Well, and I think trying to measure it puts the shame back in it.
No question.
Spirituality should never be shameful.
Never.
So I think you talked about hearing from God, praying to God,
yeah.
Talking about God. Tell me a little bit more
talking
about how to
do that. God, I think, is a result of hearing from Him and praying to Him. When we frame talking about God, it's not about, let me talk about God to my friends as much as giving students the ability to question, to ask questions, to voice their doubts. I think it was Kara Powell that said that doubt is not toxic. Unexpressed doubt is toxic.
Mm.
So our students need to be in a space and with parents and with small group leaders where they can actually express, you know what, I'm not really sure about this. Yesterday, you know, 400 people in the room, I said, how many of you still have doubts? The whole room raised their hand. So, you know, you and I both, the same things that messed with me before I started following Jesus are the same things that messed with me today. We haven't had, we don't have total victory there.
And it's like this safe container where you cannot be okay as you're learning.
Yes. And so what happens is that part of the reason why students aren't open with their faith is because they feel like I can't question something.
Or they feel like they can't, or they feel like they can't express it the right way. Yes.
Using the right language.
Right. And that's where we've gotten in a little bit of a sideways angle here, because we're trying to teach them something, but we're also not wanting them to have to regurgitate it. We want them to own their faith.
Right.
We're trying to help them be adults who have a faith of their own.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about God, we're trying to teach them to go draw from a well that exists because they're hearing from God and praying to God,
mm-hmm.
and experiencing God for themselves.
Right, right. And you know, middle school students, you know, our phase project frames it this way, that middle school students are very much like engineers.
Yes.
They put everything in these cylinders of information, and now they're trying to connect all the dots. High school students are like philosophers. And that doesn't mean they're philosophical. But high school students will talk about things, not necessarily because they believe what comes out of their mouth. They'll talk about things to hear it come out of their mouth to see if they believe it.
Yeah,
to test it. And we have to give them space to test it. And that means that the most smart-aleck, obnoxious high schooler in your small group or ministry may be the one that's really growing the most because they keep saying things out loud and they're just trying to see, do I really believe this? Yeah. Because you become accountable to whatever comes out of your mouth.
Yeah, and I don't care what phase a kid is in. They're also wondering, if I say this, will you still like me?
Yes.
Will you still believe that I can grow? Will right. you still talk to me about right. this?
And will God still love me if I question him?
Yes. And that is really, really important.
No question. Because there's something.
Deal.
I mean, we've lived long in my life long enough to know there's something coming down the pipe
yeah.
that's going to rattle you to the core of who you are. And God is okay with you asking him why. He's okay with you questioning him.
Yeah, and you might be the physical example that that's true.
Yeah. So well, giving so them good. That space to just to talk about him. And this goes back to the postmodern thing, but we're living in a day where, you know, people question the existence and question, you know, to me, I love what Tim Keller says. Everything hangs not on the fact of whether or not you like Jesus' teachings. Everything hangs on whether or not Jesus rose from the dead. You get that settled and you're going to be okay. And we have students that are going to question that. And they should, because of the way we've presented Jesus to this culture and to this generation. So if they can talk about it, that is a great habit to begin in a student because they become adults that continue to search and discover.
Yeah.
As small group leaders, youth pastors, and you know people that care about the next generation, we're just trying to provoke, you know, and fuel passion and discovery, and that's a habit that you will take into adulthood. The worst thing that could happen is the kid stops growing. Because they couldn't talk about it
yeah.
when they were in 10th grade.
Yeah, because ultimately we want them to get to this place. And I don't think these are like in order, like, but I do think that you're onto something when you say kind of hearing from God leads to being able to pray and to communicate. And praying kind of leads to this outward expression. There's something going on the inside and now something can come out of me.
Right.
And so even though some of these things can happen in different ways, different order, definitely the live for God part. That yes. habit kind of comes from a heart of gratefulness and a place where I feel like God has done something incredible in my life and or I have some gifts and I know what they are now mm-hmm. or I know that I'm made in the image of God and I have an opportunity now to share that with others. So you've talked about those three habits. What about this fourth one? How do we help a youth yeah. leader incorporate this opportunity to live for God out even outside of the church?
Sure. I think it's very simple. It's serve, and serve some more.
Yeah.
We have to. What's amazing about this generation is that you can have nominal to marginal kids who may not believe this whole thing, but they're willing to start living in such a way because they feel like they belong, to borrow something we've heard. They feel like they belong in such a way. Our church for the last several years has partnered with Tim Tebow's foundation. They do this Night to Shine. It's a prom for mentally challenged, you know, children and students. 1,000+, you know, kids in our big worship center having a prom.
That's awesome.
And it's for, you know, what I watch when I see it is the quarterback of the football team who thinks he's all that in a bucket of grease, who's never gone to school and had anybody make fun of him, mm-hmm. is the escort for this Down syndrome girl who's dressed up in a prom dress. And yeah. he's decided to take C.S. Lewis seriously, that humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. Mm-hmm. That habit changes you. And you watch this guy, I'll get emotional, you watch him walk out mm-hmm. and he can't even keep himself together because he wow. realizes I am the most selfish person in the world. And you watch the joy
yeah.
in the eyes and the minds and the hearts of, and they're much better dancers than we are anyway.
Yes, filter is off.
But yeah, but the filter's off and then it takes the filter off of you.
Yeah. Really, because what happens when you live for God, you begin to see that you're people like me. Like, yes. I'm people like you. We're made in God's image. What's special about you is different from what's special about me. But right. But we're the same kind of people.
Right. And that only that only happens when you start considering yourself less.
Yeah.
If horizontal morality is really how he measures how much we're growing in relationship with him, then we have to give teenagers a place where they can constantly serve other people.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, most high school students will say that the most significant thing I've done to help me grow spiritually is a time where I got to serve someone else. And most high school ministries only program to do it once a year.
Oh, yeah.
We do a mission trip once a year. That doesn't make any sense. So why not make it a daily, weekly, monthly part of your programming? Because that needs to become a habit.
Yeah, and actually, I'm so all about that. That's why I spend 90% of my time talking to teenagers about what they can do to kind of uncover the spiritual gift that God has given them to use to be a voice, to be a support, to add value, because they carry a part of God's image that no one else in the universe will or has or currently does. So if they don't share that, they're kind of like holding back a part of God that we were meant to know about and understand and receive.
No question.
So these are incredible ways to develop spiritual habits in teenagers, but our natural thoughts go to how do you begin developing these sooner and how do you modify these so parents and leaders can begin to encourage kids to hear from God and pray to God and talk about God.
Well, to speak from the teenage world backwards, someone very wise when Kelly and I, when Kelly was pregnant with Grant, our first child, and we were scared to death about being parents because we knew teenage years were going to come and we had worked with teenagers for so long. And we were like, oh no. Someone very wise told us that you raise teenagers when they're children. So everything we've said up to this point is really, really good for anyone that works with toddlers, elementary age, preschoolers. It's so important. But there are parts of these habits that someone younger is going to probably use more. So, for example, it's much easier for an elementary age kid to talk to God because their imagination hasn't been tainted. They still are, oh, Jesus is real. Let me talk to him. And so it's a great time for you to teach children how to talk to God because children will still talk to God. Children are also, in my opinion, they're much more apt to talk about God. It's students that have a difficult time. Students lean much more toward, let me live for God. Let me serve somebody. This is a time, we are living in a time in youth ministry, at least, where maybe the most evangelical thing you can do, or evangelistic thing you could do, I should say, is to do missions and serve.
Yeah.
Because you can get nominal, marginal kids to go on a mission trip with you. And they will serve because it's just a part of who we are right now. Mm-hmm. People want to do that. But with elementary age, the whole talking to God deal is a big deal. And talking about God or praying to God and talking about God, those are much more aligned with where elementary age children are. And so those are habits that you can really begin to help them with. It's difficult. Obviously, there are more ways to hear from God than the scriptures, but it's a little more difficult, obviously, with preschoolers for them to, read their Bible because they're just learning how to read. And there's so much in it that they don't understand, but you can help them. You can help them develop that habit of praying to God and talking about him.
Well, that's really good. And I know that starting four new habits at once can feel a little bit overwhelming, whether you're helping a three-year-old, a six-year-old, middle school, high school student. Where would you suggest a youth minister or even a children's minister start when they're thinking, okay, there's these four habits and we have 1 hour a week, or just imagine you've got this one time. Sure. We have small group, or we have our program, or maybe we just have our Sunday school class, depending on what kind of church it is and what they do. Where would you even begin? What do you suggest a starting point?
One thing to consider is that our education system in our country has convinced us that everything is scope and sequence, because in the education system, we have markers that children and students have to know certain things by these times before they can pass on to the next grade. That's not, we're talking about something that is relational.
Mm-hmm. And spiritual.
So it, instead of it being sequential, it needs to be cyclical. It needs to be a constant, it's almost like a filter that you're constantly pouring children and students through this filter, and it has to be done within the context of relationships.
So you mentioned that it's important that this be cyclical mm-hmm. and not, you know, just one thing that you talk about once a year. So really, spiritual habits and spiritual formation should be more of a priority that leads what you do. So if you have a message or you're teaching kids something, it's like always a priority in the back of your mind. How mm-hmm. will they hear from God in this? Mm-hmm. Or so is there a way for you to kind of layer these four spiritual habits in everything you do? Is there a way to kind of maybe leverage your influence with leaders or maybe you train your small group leaders in the habits and help them?
You said it earlier. It's about developing a culture mm-hmm. that upholds and is spiritually disciplined. Yeah. So if I'm a youth pastor, a student leader, I want to recruit leaders that I can invest in them this ability to live their life of faith out loud and in public with students and
That's
to
great.
Simply do life with them.
That's good.
And I am going to do this with you alongside me, and I'm going to read the scriptures, and I'm going to listen to things, and I'm going to talk to you about what I heard about Jesus. And that's important. The whole scripture thing, one of the things we have to understand, I think it's the Barna Group and the American Bible Society just released this study in which it's some of the research. Over the last 6 years, there's been a 17% to 10% decrease in the number of people that actively engage with the Bible. There's been a 17 to 21% increase in the number of people who think that the scriptures have nothing to say that is relevant. And there's two reasons why. One is that it is an old book. And you and I are dealing with a generation that does not read. And so part of the struggle with students taking the scripture seriously is simple. It's a book and it's old. The other reason is very interesting. It's an old book that is anti-me. It's anti-everything I'm about for all of those marginalized students. It's so anti the things that I am struggling with. So why in the world would I? Well, we have to develop leaders that, you know, they bring the scriptures to life with their life.
This is what
this has done for me. So I think it's a culture of relationships.
That's so good. So it's a culture of relationships. So I'm going to ask one more question, and this has been really, really good. If it's
You're really lying.
I'm not lying. This is amazing. This is good stuff. I'm taking notes. we have an orange here in the Orange Podcast studio. So I'm thinking we're ready for that. Are you hungry?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm good.
All right. So one last
not
question.
Not that orange. Look at it. Yikes.
One last question. It is a culture of relationships. We're talking about a lot about youth leaders, but we know that there's more influence coming from a parent than from a youth leader. So how can we enlist parents to help them? I'm guessing they're going to have to help themselves also, but how are you going to help them help their kids develop these habits and keep them alive in their homes?
Sure. There's nothing more dicey or sensitive than parenting. If I really want to have a wedge in my relationship with you, Brooklyn, let me question your parenting, because the mama bear will come out and you will become defensive. And the reason we're defensive as fellow parents, we're not good at this. Can we just be honest?
We are not
we
good
are
at this.
Not
Can we
good
just,
at this.
Is, that's the best PSA today.
It is. We are not good
Hello,
at being parents.
Hello, my name is Brooklyn Lindsay, and I am not a good parent.
Exactly. We weren't born parents. And I mean, I'll take it a step further. I hope this isn't too far. But when you consider how little forethought we had before we became parents, most of us never sat down and said, what is it going to be our philosophy?
Right.
Most of it, the husband went, you're hot. And the wife went, and you decided to. And some of us were dumb enough to do it multiple times.
Oh, wow.
But here's the thing. Every mom and dad cares immensely for their children. You know, you would give your life for your kids. what we have to help mom and dad begin to see is that we really are on the same page, because the most important thing to you as a parent is the well-being of your child. Mm-hmm. And we believe the most important thing about your child is their relationship with God. And when we begin to live in such a way where their children begin to change, or at least begin to take these minute incremental steps toward becoming a better person, mom and dad notice that.
Yeah.
It's virtually impossible to take an atheist and make them a missionary. We can't do that with mom and dad, but we can help mom and dad do one more thing than they're already doing. So if there's a way that I can encourage a dad who's never talked about Jesus out loud in front of their children, but it's in him, mm-hmm. he just doesn't know it, mm-hmm. or he just doesn't talk about it. If there's a way that I can get him to express that part of his heart in front of his children go.
Yeah.
If those of you at home, I just jerked my head. I mean, that changes a kid, a mom or dad that's never prayed out loud in front of their children.
Yeah, they notice.
They notice. Oh, this is huge. A mom and dad who start serving, who start becoming selfless. And I think youth ministries and our church ministries can provide at least communication to give mom and dad an opportunity. The advantage that a small group leader has, that a small group leader is expected to do that. But if we give our parents an opportunity, because I think most parents, that as Jesus starts rattling in them, they want to begin to express that. They just don't know how to do it. And we, on the ministry end of things, make parents scapegoats. But the reality is, we think about it more than they do. As a parent, my head is down just trying to help my kids make it through the day. And it's when I get rattled that I go, whoa, life is more than grades and, you know, we were laughing about this earlier, their Instagram battles and the social media. This whole thing is spiritual. And it's in those moments when I can actually become intentional in what it is that I'm modeling. We just have to help mom and dad get their head up.
Yeah, that's good. It's real good. I think that when we combine those influences, I mean, we know and believe that 1 + 1 = 2. So when we can make a little bit of progress together, it's going to be better.
Right.
When it comes to hearing from God, talking to God, praying to God, talking about God.
It's basically
living for God. It doesn't matter how small you start, whether you're a leader, a parent, it just matters that you do and that we're there to help each other. So this has been really, really good. I'm excited to go home and talk with my 10-year-old. I have a Bible I love. It's called the Jesus Storybook Bible.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I think it's the first Bible that we've used that they really liked listening to and looking at, because it's very beautiful and illustrated. And so I think for me, just getting back to the habit of reading to her, that encouraged me to do that.
Well,
so I'm going to go home and read to my daughter.
I miss the 10-year-old days because I'm dealing with college students who I have to give them all this apologetic information. You know, this is why you should trust in Jesus, you know, that kind of thing. That's I miss the Jesus Bible story days.
I think
days.
Sometimes we should swap, like, families, you know, not like totally, but just for like a minute, 10
minutes. Don't they have a TV show like that?
Yeah. But
Family
I mean,
swap?
I don't think that's a good idea.
Different story.
Totally different. But I'm thinking that's why it takes more than one adult in a kid's life, because you're in the apologetic phase, but they might need some apologetics in a different way. And
sure.
So having different types of people at different levels in their life can really help them wherever they are. Because the truth is, a kid or a teenager is always going to be at a different place spiritually than every other kid.
And to me, don't you think this is true? That's the hardest part about being a small group leader.
Yeah.
That I think we undersell this, that every kid is at a different place spiritually, physically, emotionally, morally. And it's almost like if I had a playlist of 16 different genres of music, and we're asking volunteers to be able to dance to every one of them.
Or to dance at all.
Or to dance at all. But that's really because there's a rhythm to every single kid. And I mean, don't you think that's true?
Oh,
that's why leading small groups is hard.
Yeah, well, every kid's going to have experienced spirituality differently. The key is meet them where they are. That's what
good.
You're saying. Meet them in relationship.
Yeah.
Introduce them to Jesus. Keep doing it. Keep living it. and those habits are going to begin. Yeah,
and
to
just
develop.
Like Hitch with Kevin James, keep it right here when you dance.
Okay. Oh, I love that reference. Do you know I use that all like almost every time there's an opportunity
you
to
know
dance?
Why? Because
I go
you
right
are,
back to that you, space.
Your humor is the Kristen Wiig of youth communicators.
Thank you. Thank you.
In fact, if people knew us well, you're like Kristen Wiig. I'm the love child of John C. Reilly and Will Ferrell.
I don't know who John C. Reilly is, but Will Ferrell. Okay.
I'm not talking about my humor. I'm talking about the way I look.
Oh, okay. Well, I have tiny hands, and I'm going to end this podcast now. Well, that's a Kristen Wiig like reference, by the way. I'm going to go back and work at Target.
Kristen Wiig, Bridesmaids. Check it out.
Or just go to Target and get an accent. But anyway, wisdom from Stuart Hall today. Thank you so much. This was fun.
Brooklyn, you're awesome. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for being with us.
Ashley, Brooklyn Lindsay just crushed that interview.
She did.
Did she make Stuart cry? Is that? Did you
she
hear?
She pulled
that?
Something, some passion out of him.
My
man.
Gosh, she did a fantastic job, and it was so great to hear the passion that he has for this topic, for this idea of those four habits. That was incredible. Before we go back to talking about Stuart and Lindsay, I mean Adam Duckworth. He's like got one of those voices that I just want to keep listening to. And the fact that he's speaking so much wisdom, mm-hmm. I mean, that just adds to the, mm-hmm. he's the complete package. I mean, some of the stuff he was talking there, I love that idea of it's not just about giving them head knowledge. It's about showing them the four habits. It's about revealing that over time. Did you yeah. do
in the
you
context agree? Of relationships? I think that's so important.
That's so key. It's more like deductive teaching instead of inductive, which I really, really love. And then Stuart Hall just brought it home with those mm-hmm. Four spiritual habits, right?
Yeah, he did. You know, I was thinking the whole time just about the skills that are needed, mm-hmm. you know, to form a habit and yep. specifically like if we can get students and kids to hear from God, whether it's from God's word, reading it or talking about it in small group yeah. or whether it's experiencing it in creation or some kind of experience like that and get kids to feel safe enough to ask questions about God in the context of relationship, in the context of a small group.
Yeah.
I think when they feel safe to ask questions about their doubts, if they feel safe to tell their stories about what God's done in their life and they see an adult who loves them, who cares about them, who accepts them and shares the story about what God's done in their life.
Yeah.
And they're inspired by that, you know, and kids and teenagers, they need to see other people talk about God totally. In order for them to feel safe to talk about God. And I think the skill of living your life for God, and a life of service is yep. so important. Giving students and kids opportunities to serve hands-on, be the hands and feet of God. And
that's so good.
Just a prompt towards prayer. I think that's so, so important for them to learn how to talk to God, that there's not like a right way
yeah.
or a wrong way.
Yeah, I love that as well because, you know, when I became a Christian and started going to church, I would hear these people pray with certain words that I wouldn't use in my normal language. So understanding that you're teaching like my kids that praying is just a natural thing.
Right.
I absolutely love that.
Yeah.
I love what you guys do.
Yeah, I think, you know, these four spiritual habits are what's going to help a student and kid develop a faith of their own.
100% agree. That is so good. So good. Hey, if you're listening to this and you know a ministry leader or you're in children's or students' ministries yourself, then I want to encourage you to make sure you share this podcast. There was some fantastic stuff here that really does make such a big difference in a child's or a student's life. So make sure you share this. If you want to find out more information about the stuff that was discussed, you can always check out our show notes. Those show notes are always in exactly the same spot that they're every single week, right? They haven't moved or anything like that.
ThinkOrangePodcast.com.
I was getting to it. All you need to do is go to the ThinkOrangePodcast.com, ThinkOrangePodcast.com. And as always, we want you to do two more things. We want you to subscribe.
Because we don't want you to miss an episode.
We certainly don't. And we also want you to review because we want to see this thing just get out to more people. It's not about us reading it. Well, I don't know if you do, but I don't read it and go, oh, so-and-so thinks we're good.
I do.
I'm not surprised. I like people reviewing because the more reviews we get, it means the more people will actually get to see the content that we're putting out there. And I think the content is just that valuable, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. As always, I'm going to do our regular sign-off. You know it by now. Say it with us wherever you're listening right now. If you're in your car, I want you to shout this out with us. If you're at home, if you're at work, even better, right? If you're in the office right now, maybe you're a teacher. I want you to, regardless if the kids are taking a test, I want you to say it with us. You ready, Ash?
I am ready, and you just built that up.
I did, didn't
this
I?
This is going to be the loudest this exit ever in the history of the Think Orange podcast.
We want to hear this reverberate around the world from all of our thousands and thousands of listeners. Are you ready? Say it with us. When you think next generation,
think orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.